I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being there. Thank you for writing to us. Thank you for all the things we're very grateful for. Mm.
I was thinking the other day when I was listening to the podcast, I should probably re-record the beginning bit because it says that's what prompted us to start this true crime podcast. But we're way past starting,
well,
aren't we?
We are, yeah. We've 4.5 years in. 150 podcasts,
yeah,
something like that.
Mm.
And now we're talking to people this week about some other kind of interaction with the podcast.
Who knows?
Who knows? I mean, it's a mystery, but it's very exciting. Still, even now, and we have been doing it a bit. It's very exciting to do, and very nice, and very very warm. I know the subject's not always very cheerful, but it really is a warm experience, and we know you're there, and you know we're here, and we're there for each other. So for me, it's an absolute joy.
Yeah, me too.
So, Mo, you've been gardening?
No, I haven't been gardening. No, I have a client who's written a book about flowers, and she's doing a kind of book launch. I was at an event for that, plus I've been to the theatre and set visit and all sorts.
What have you seen? In the theatre?
I saw The Father and the Assassin at the National.
Okay.
It's a new play about the assassination or the assassinator of Gandhi and about the partition of India, which was, you know, interesting because historically I don't know that much about that. But I find historical stories rather didactic. Mm-hmm. They don't really do it for me.
No.
My client was great though.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's good to see. Always good to hear. And are you allowed to go round now? I mean, is the COVID still?
You never go round anyway. I mean, probably people come round when you were in the theatre, but I'd rarely go round. They always come out.
They'd come out, yeah.
Mm. But yeah, there was a party afterwards. So yeah, no, we're back on track, as it were, in the theatre.
Yes. Yes, I haven't been to the theatre. I have watched every episode of 10%, the English version of Call My Agent, or 10% as it's called in France, really.
It is, yeah.
But still struggled with it.
Not the same.
It's not. It doesn't have that joie de vivre.
Mm.
I've watched 4 episodes of Gaslit with Julia Roberts and Sean Penn.
Oh, that's meant to be good.
It is good. It's very good.
What's that on Amazon?
Well, Stars Play, but okay. You can have a first month for free.
Okay.
So
we've signed up to that, haven't
we? We've signed up for the first month for free.
I've fallen into the trap. For my whole family, I pay for Netflix, Amazon, Apple,
yeah,
and Disney.
Yes.
For my whole family.
Well, I shall.
Is it because I work in the entertainment business?
I think we should start contributing to your.
No, it's
costs.
Fine. It's fine. It's all fine.
So I did. Yeah, I watched that, which I thought was very, very good. I thought Sean Penn was quite magnificent, and she was very, very good. And it's a great story.
Sean Penn's good in Licorice Pizza. You didn't see that yet?
I haven't seen that yet. No, I'd like to see it very much.
Yeah, I really liked it. I really liked it a lot.
But he is very—he's very good. Can be difficult, but he's very, very good. No, I haven't gone to see Top Gun Maverick.
Yet.
I think it'll wild horses wouldn't drive me to see it, I don't think.
Yeah, fair.
I've had my breath taken away quite enough.
Oh, TC.
Yeah.
TC. He's the gift that keeps on giving, isn't he?
He certainly is. What have I done? I've also prepared for some more broadcasts. Not just the podcast, I have to prepare for other broadcasts as well.
You're a busy man.
So I prepped. And one of those is one of my real struggles, is big American multiples.
Mm.
Because it becomes overwhelming. You're dealing with 12 or victims, all different names, in different... And you go... Actually, this is actually geographically close together. It's a quite an interesting case, a copycat case. But And the other one I'm preparing is one that you and I have done, Molly. David Bieber.
Oh, that helps.
Yeah. I've got a whole chapter on him in Lifers, Stroke Pure Evil. Mm. And you'll be pleased to see I have the first copy of The West, The New West.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
Oh, that's so exciting, Dad.
Given to me on Monday.
God, that's quick.
They've been incredibly professional. All
that's
the way through.
Wonderful. It looks great.
Yeah, and it's a real, you know, it's a supermarket book in its shape now because I've changed it. I've taken out the index. I've taken out the chronology. I've taken out the last chapter of the paperback about John West was not really appropriate to the book. And I've pared it down so that it's just about Frederick
that's
and Rosemary
great.
West.
Oh, well, listeners, won't be long now until you can buy one.
No, I think they're on their way to...
You've probably got the originals, but to support Geoffrey, probably worth buying the re-release.
Well, there'll be a lot of people out there who won't have the original because, of course, it was published nearly 30 years ago.
Mm, true.
So it's kind of... I have to say, all compliments to them, Bonnier Books and the John Blake imprint of them, have done an absolutely super job very quickly. So it was all, it's very encouraging.
Excellent. Well, we better get on. What are we doing today, Dad?
Well, we're going to do a case which has been mentioned to us a number of times. Most recently, I was reminded about it by our regular correspondent, Phil Brown.
Oh, hey, Phil.
Who's not been well, I'm afraid, but never mind. And it's quite a complicated one, but it's very... It asks a number of very interesting moral questions, which, as you know, I love.
You do like putting me on the spot for those
moral
two,
questions.
Don't you?
I do like that. Mm. And it's quite, it's very good for us as well. This concerns, and we'll probably call it this, Peter George Dinsdale.
We're just going to call it Peter.
Peter
George
Dinsdale. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Are we going?
Okay. Off we go.
Okay.
Peter George Dinsdale was born on the 31st of July 1960 in Manchester. He was the son of a sex worker called Doreen and was brought up partly by his grandmother and partly from various children's homes. He suffered from epilepsy and another debilitating condition, which I'll come on to. But he also had a sister. This was a very dysfunctional family. There can be no doubt about that. But he was a particularly challenged young man. He was disabled, had a very particular disability. His right leg was crippled, and so was his right arm. He couldn't really move it above clutching across his chest. He also had a sadly low IQ. Might have been 65, might have been 73, but no more than that. So we're talking about a frail, vulnerable, sad case, really. He didn't really get a job much. He was a labourer, and his nickname was Daft Pete.
Charming.
Yeah. In 1979, when he was 19, his mother remarried and changed her name. And his stepfather's name was Lee. So he changed his name by deed poll to Bruce George Peter Lee. It's a homage to the martial arts star Bruce Lee. So we're now talking about a man who's known as Bruce George Peter Lee. So if you Google him, you may well find you get Peter Dinsdale. Whereas if you Google Peter Dinsdale, you may not, or you may or may not get Bruce George Peter Lee. The same year that he changed his name, he was, as I say, 19. I think there is a connection between the two, but I cannot be sure of it. On the 4th of December that year, Peter was just, well, he was 19 and a half. There was a fire in a house in Selby Street in Hull. Peter had ended up in Hull. He'd been brought up partly by his grandmother on the other side of the Humber in Lincolnshire, but he ended up in Hull. And this was a traumatic fire. A woman called Edith Hasty lived there with her four sons, Thomas and Charles, who were both 15, Paul, who was 12, and Peter, who was 8. Her three daughters were living with a relative. She had 7 children. And her husband, Tommy, was in jail. This was what you might describe as a family that not many people in Selby Street actually liked much. They can, you know, graffiti, antisocial behaviour, vandalism. Hasties were, not popular. Anyway, on this particular evening, a fire started. Not clear at the outset how, but Charles, one of the two older boys, was quick-witted enough to sense the fire and the smoke, rush into his mother's bedroom and encourage her to jump out of the first floor window. It was a two-storey little terraced house in a northern city. You know, what you can imagine what it looks like. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a very long jump down, and she didn't hurt herself particularly.
Okay.
Charles then went back into the front room where his two youngest brothers were, Paul and Peter, and attempted to save them. But by that point, the fire was so intense that he failed. In fact, all three were very severely burnt. The other brother, Thomas, suffered from muscular dystrophy and was in another bedroom, and was actually saved by the fire brigade. So Edith and her son Thomas survive, but the three boys all die. They don't all die in the fire at the point, but they're so badly burned that over the next few days they can't survive. Now, the police are naturally interested in how this fire started, and it becomes quite clear quite quickly that someone has poured paraffin through the letterbox. Now, the police already knew that Hasty was a problem family, and they hadn't made many friends. In fact, quite the reverse. They'd made quite a lot of enemies in the local area. And a lot of local teenagers, including Peter Dinsdale, were questioned about the fire because the police were working on the assumption that it was someone looking for revenge on the Hasty family. Now, exactly why and exactly how this happened is still a matter of debate. But Peter Dinsdale, about 6 months after the fire, in other words, the summer of the next year, confesses in great detail about how he got the paraffin and a rag and set it alight. And they asked him, why did you do it? And he said, well, it was a rather strange excuse, but remember, we are dealing with a very challenged young man here.
Mm-hmm.
He said it was because he had some kind of sexual contact with Charles, one of the boys that died in the fire, and Charles had been demanding some kind of payment, presumably blackmail, I don't know, because at that point Charles was a minor and he wasn't, Dinsdale wasn't. To add a little added complication, Dinsdale had become infatuated with one of Charles's sisters, Angelina, but she'd rejected him outright. It's a little complicated, I grant you, but you've got the broad drift.
Mm-hmm.
And Dinsdale says, and it's a famous quote, I didn't mean to kill them. There's been an awful lot of speculation in the years since. I mean, we are talking about 1979, 1980, that there was some kind of element of coercion in the interview, in the interrogation and in the confession. But that's been categorically denied, and the Humberside police have made it abundantly clear there was no coercion at all, that Dinsdale just started talking. But then, out of the blue and for no apparent reason, Dinsdale confesses to a whole string of arson attacks. I mean, literally, starting when he was 12. Now, we both know, we've talked about it before, it's one of those, you know, warning signs.
Precursors to serial killing.
Of killing. He confessed to starting a string of fires in Hull, as I say, starting when he was 12. And not one of those fires was called suspicious, although a total of 26 people had died as a result.
Wow.
Including 11 in an old people's home.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, why did he confess?
Maybe once he'd unburdened himself of one, he just was like, oh, that was so relieving, I'm just going to tell everyone.
That would be perfect.
Like an addiction or something, when you, they're like, oh, if I tell people, I'll stop doing it.
Yes. There were literally, I mean, altogether, 26 people, including 11 in a residential home, a six-month-old baby, and a young mother with three sons were killed. And dozens of others suffered smoke inhalation.
Burns, etc.
And were injured. I mean, it's a horrifying story. But when he finally went to trial in January 1981, although this is at Leeds Crown Court, he pleaded not guilty to murder, but guilty to manslaughter by reason of diminished responsibility. He's charged with 26 killings and 11 counts of arson. The case attracted remarkably little interest because at the same time, the Yorkshire Ripper, Peter Sutcliffe, was about to go on trial. And this was how, well, one paper once put it at the time, this wasn't hands-on killing of 26 people, it was all as a result of arson.
Yeah, but still killing.
Still killing, I agree. It's... Dinsdale doesn't have staring eyes and black curly hair like Sutcliffe. He's rather a tragic figure. In 1983, in other words, he's sentenced to... In fact, he's sent to Rampton eventually, Rampton Secure Hospital. He used to call it a place for the mentally insane. Now it's just simply a residential secure hospital. And a public inquiry into the fire at the residential home discovered that Dinsdale hadn't set the fire and it was entirely accidental. So those 11 deaths were not Dinsdale's responsibility. And his conviction was quashed by the Court of Appeal. At that point, Dinsdale changed his name again. Hence the slightly confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's known as Peter Tredgett. T-R-E-D-E-G-T. Tredgett.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still in Rampton Secure Hospital. But he's now claims that he was utterly innocent of all the crimes except the Selby Street. Aha. Right? He's consigned to, in fact, he's not now in Rampton, he's in a secure home in the home counties, but, and he has been photographed on day release, actually, but he's still held. And in 2021, the Criminal Cases Review Commission, based on they made an appeal, that his lawyers made an appeal saying his physical condition meant that he couldn't have set those fires.
Mm.
You know, he had a terrible limp. His right arm was almost useless. He just couldn't have set those fires. And in 2022, this year, Peter Dinsdale, as was, Tredgett is now, was acquitted of 2 counts of arson and 3 of manslaughter. So now from 26 deaths, it's down to 14 deaths.
Okay.
But the Court of Appeal upheld the rest of the conviction. the Selby Street fire and the other fires. He has been proclaiming his innocence, apart from Selby Street, I think, since 1983. And we're now 40 years mm-hmm. later. When he committed the Selby Street fire, he was 19. He's now 61 and he's still incarcerated. He was one policeman described him as pitiable, another as awkward. But one thing is certain, this is a very strange and messy case. At one point, Dinsdale is quoted as saying in an interrogation, "My master is fire. I am devoted to fire and I despise people." It all is a very confusing and rather unhappy story, because although the Court of Appeal re-looked at the case, there's remarkably little either forensic or direct evidence apart from Dinsdale's confession. The moral question you have to ask yourself here is a man with a very low IQ, and let's be frank about that, is he capable of this kind of activity? Or is it simply he's filling out a fantasy? Or is he living in some strange parallel universe that we can't grasp? All I would say is that he's been held for a very, very long time. I mean, more than 40 years.
Yeah.
And he was very young. Now, none of us can know the psychopathology of serial killers. But this brings, it really does worry me, this whole business, you know, that they brought the diminished responsibility, the court accepted diminished responsibility. Surely that would have meant that he was, you know, regularly reassessed. I mean, had there been the death penalty, Peter Dinsdale would have gone to the gallows.
Yeah.
And in that respect, he's incredibly like Timothy Evans, who, after all, had a very low IQ, didn't really understand what was happening to him, didn't understand that, you know, he was actually confessing to crimes that had been committed by his landlord, John Christie. And you have to wonder whether or not we as a justice system can deal with that. I mean,
maybe things are different now, though, because we're more aware of mental health and maybe we look at things differently now.
Yes, maybe we do. Maybe we're more lenient. I don't know. I mean, they are dreadful crimes. There's no question. At least a lot of people lost their lives. But they weren't stabbed in the back
no,
streets.
That doesn't
of Leeds.
Make any difference, I don't think.
No,
I don't think you can. It's like we were talking about the other day, like one person's life has more value than another person's life. Yeah. That one form of murder is better than another form.
Yes.
The result is the same.
The result is the same. People lose their lives. Yes, I accept that. But I have I can't help but feeling just a little troubled about this case. It does remind me strongly of Timothy Evans. There are other cases. We've talked about some of them. I'm not saying he's pitiable, but certainly he's an awkward kind of chap. I don't know. I confess to being slightly confused. It's a very interesting case and in many ways very frightening, but also slightly worrying.
Yeah, I see what you mean, as in, like, did the system fail him? Was he actually
capable of making the judgment?
Why would you confess to murders you didn't commit? Unless, as you say, he was coerced. Is that why people think he was coerced yes. into the first confession? Because he actually reneged on all the other confessions.
That has been up and down over the years, but it was long since put to bed. You know, the whole concept of him being coerced, I don't think stands. But I think he was... Was he aware of exactly what he was...
Has anyone talked to him now?
Not that I'm aware of.
Do we not do that?
Well, he must be regularly psychiatrically assessed. But we
haven't
heard...
He's probably totally institutionalised by now anyway.
Oh, I would have thought probably. Yes. I mean, so he spent 40 years in special secure hospital.
You can do at this point.
Yeah.
Probably more disadvantageous to him to release him anyway.
Well, whether he could survive on the outside would be a... but no one's heard of him, of the family. It's
interesting.
It's interesting, isn't it? What are we offering? You know, what was that old Frank Longford quote? You know, everybody is capable of remorse. I'm not sure I believe it, but...
Yeah, I don't know about that. One's a tricky one, isn't it? And especially with what we do.
Everybody's capable of it, of rehabilitation.
Do you think you can be rehabilitated if you don't know what you did in the first place?
Well, what a good question. If you weren't really aware of what you were doing when you went in.
Or whether you did it at all.
Or whether you did it at all. Was he in a complete fantasy world? Did he not realise what he was actually doing?
You not well, realise the severity of it because his IQ was low or...
And because he was, you know, he was a Daft Pete, his nickname, you know, it was just local lad who...
Daft Pete.
Yes. So that's the case of Peter Dinsdale.
Peter George Dinsdale. Thanks, Dad. Thanks, Phil. And anyone else who suggested that. Very interesting.
Yes, I think it was someone did last year as well. But I didn't know the case well enough and I had to go back.
Interesting.
It is, and it does raise a question which we have talked about before. And that's, how do we cope with... Because we often talk about these among the, you know, the perpetrators that we discuss. People who are, in a sense... disconnected from a moral compass. Is this right if I set fire to that house?
I don't know. Difficult one.
It is actually, it's really quite a complicated one.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of very clever men have spent a lot of very clever and very clever women have spent a lot of time worrying about this, but how could the criminal justice system cope with it? To do that, you must be mad. Well, should they have charged him with murder? Would a jury have found him guilty? It's an interesting one.
Tricky.
Well, was his original defence flawed in that he accepted responsibility? Well,
and
of course, what the public prosecutor, the CPS, or is it now, is would say is, we have a confession. What more do you want?
No, well, fair enough.
Yeah. But there must be a little sliver of doubt in my mind.
Do we have to psychiatrically analyse everybody who gives a confession?
I think we should. I mean, nowadays it's commonplace for judges to ask for psychiatric reports before they go into sentencing.
Mm.
Then it was much quicker, faster.
Yeah, I mean, one hopes the system's moved on.
I hope so. But nevertheless, you've still left this husk of a man to spend his 40-odd years of his life behind secure walls, along with Peter Sutcliffe.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, there you go.
There you do go.
Yes. Well, darling, what... Say something. Let's say something cheerful now.
Cheerful. I don't know. I haven't got too much on next week. Just, going to the actual book launch of my client who's written this book about flowers.
Lovely.
Yeah, which will be nice.
Where are you having that? In somewhere botanical?
It's actually near my house. It's at what was the Jeffrey Museum, but is now called the Museum of Home. Which is some old almshouses on Kingsland Road.
Oh, I know, yes.
Or the top of Shoreditch High Street, end of Kingsland Road bit. Yeah. There's some almshouses there which they've turned into a museum.
Oh, that's rather wonderful.
Yeah, it'll be nice, hopefully, if the weather's nice.
What am I doing this week?
Going away.
Well, now I've got to do some Britain's Most Evil. Crikey, you can't turn on Sky Crime without getting more Britain's
Finding
most
Finding more
evil.
Jeffrey.
World's most evil, Britain's most... I mean, 3 hours a day.
3 hours of you a day.
Yeah.
Too much for anyone.
Well, I don't... It's very unnerving, I have to tell you. It's most unnerving.
Well, well done you.
But,
Well, thank you to all the people that help us, our producer, Sam Brain, to my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, and to Jeffrey for doing all the hard work, and to you, the listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you all. Thank you very, very much. Thank you for Molly, because it was, as you all know, Molly's idea originally. As I said to somebody on earlier this week, I didn't even know what a podcast was. So here we are. And many, many, many cases later.
Yeah.
Still going along. Still finding it interesting.
Plenty of content.
It's good content. Mm. So, as we've also said before, arson has always been one of the signals of someone who has a very murderous intent, along with hurting furry animals when they're small. But we can't tell what would have happened to Peter Dinsdale had he, not confessed to the Selby Street fire in Hull. But so do please be careful out there.